Montana talks here. Live and local. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, let's start with some good news here on this Tuesday. First, though, we're going to have to make it Unwoke Wednesday. We're going to have to do an Unwoke Wednesday on Wednesday's Montana Talks because John Jackson, the Joker from X, he's busy today running around, but I think he's going to be able to be with us tomorrow. So we'll have an Unwoke Wednesday for you. You got to get a little unwokeness in your week. So we'll have that for you on tomorrow's show. Let's start with some good news here on this Tuesday. Hopefully this is a sign of more vetoes to come, but Governor Greg Gianforte vetoed a bill to ban styrofoam, First off, some of you are probably thinking, how did that bill even make it to the governor's desk? That sounds like something Bozeman Democrats would be pushing. That sounds like something that California Democrats would be pushing. That sounds like something that the Missoula delegation would be pushing. How in the world does a bill like that get to the governor's desk? Well, but then again, what did we see in this recent legislative session here? Handful of Republicans voting with Democrats, and you start to see California-style bills getting across the finish line. Nonetheless, Governor Greg Gianforte vetoing that bill to ban styrofoam. He shared this video on X.
A bill just came to my desk that bans styrofoam containers for food and drinks in Montana. This bill would create a new government program costing taxpayers $300,000. It would also force higher costs on 7,500 Montana restaurants and businesses, as well as consumers. The state banning styrofoam is costly government overreach. And like many Montanans, I enjoy hot coffee in a styrofoam cup because it keeps it hot. And this bill is a hot mess.
Now, $300,000, is that what he said it would cost to implement this California-style ban? I mean, that's just crazy. I don't even like a styrofoam cup for coffee, but I don't think we need to spend $300,000 preventing those of you who do like using a styrofoam cup from having that. I prefer a paper cup. But in other news, I was wondering, all of a sudden I've been noticing some more posts on X. In fact, we've got a caller on the phone lines right now as well. I was wondering what's in the news right now when it comes to student loans. There must be a big news story out there that's generating more discussion over student loans, college student loans. And then I see a headline here, CNN, federal student loans are due again. A record percentage of borrowers are seriously delinquent. Yeah, I think a lot of them thought they were going to get their loans paid off by you and me, and that didn't happen. So now the payment is due. Fox Business has a headline, student loan borrowers in default begin facing debt collections. All right, we'll talk about that and more. Phone lines are open for you, 294-0970. We'll start with your calls next.
Tackling the issues that shape our state. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, we got the phone lines open for you. Anything and everything you want to talk about here on Montana Talks, the show where you get to talk, 406-294-0970. Yeah, I figured there must be something regarding student loans in the news because I was seeing more chatter on X referencing student loans, getting messages from listeners, etc. But this was the tweet. This was the post on X that caught my eye. Dinesh D'Souza shared this yesterday, and it was actually an older tweet from Todd Hagopian back in 2020. He wrote this. If you are an 18-year-old with an amazing business plan and willing to work 80-plus hours a week, no bank will loan you $100,000. If you are 18, zero work ethic, plan to go to school to drink excessively, hook up with strangers, and major in art, every bank will loan you $100,000. And then he included the hashtag student loans. Haley in Whitefish, what's your thoughts? Thanks for the call.
Thanks for having me. So I just want to make a comment. I totally like the student loan forgiveness thing is absolutely ridiculous. I'm in my 30s. I have student loans. But the thing that really kills us is actually the interest. So, like, I got my Wells Fargo student loans back in 2009 when I graduated high school. And as they consolidated through the years, I started paying then in 2015 after I got out of college. And that loan originally was somewhere between $60,000 to $65,000. And the interest was like 8 to 9% originally. And I paid in, since then, in the last 10 years, about $62,000. Yet, because of interest, I have $37,000 left on the loan. So it's really, it's not even about loan forgiveness. It's just the interest rate that's a bit of an issue.
Yeah, it just makes the whole thing feel like a big scam, doesn't it? It's like, that's what, because I was, you know, you're younger than me, obviously, but when I was a kid in the 90s in high school, they would tell us, hey, don't worry about it, just take out the student loan, this, you got to go to college, you got to get that degree. Now, for me and for my profession, it made sense, like that, you know, I knew what I was getting into, but, you know, I paid off my student loans in Afghanistan, and I just paid them down as fast as I possibly could, but yeah, they were telling everybody, oh, don't worry about it, just take out the student loans. And because I worked and, you know, made money waiting tables, that was basically used against me. And so it was such garbage to see some kids get handed free money in the form of a grant, but then, you know, working class kids like me who worked during high school, oh, we didn't get the free money, we had to take out a rip-off student loan.
No, I totally agree. And it feels like it's not just a college issue, it's also a banking issue. So, like, if you want to solve some of these, I'm a Christian, and I don't believe in interest personally, but, like, we live in a society that everything operates on interest. I mean, how much better would our world be, and how much better would all of our lives be if we didn't have to pay so much in interest? So, to me, that's just, it's a bigger issue that has been presented in student loans because the price itself is so high, but I think we see it in almost every type of debt we have in our society now.
Well, and a lot of that is because of big government getting in bed with some of these some of these institutions and the bigger ones, right? It's interesting. I don't have the verse memorized, but you talk about being Christian, and yeah, I mean it's actually in the Bible. I don't think the Bible mentions interest itself being a bad thing, but it certainly, when it comes to exorbitant interest rates and people who would abuse their positions of power to scam people out of their money, very clearly is spoken out against in the Bible.
Well, that's all I have for you. Thanks so much for your time today.
Hey, thanks. Haley, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. 406-294-0970 is the number for you. Kevin in Billings next up. We've been talking a lot about illegal aliens in the state and in the country. Kevin, what's your thoughts?
So this weekend there was a story about Obama's 3 million deportees, and 85% of the deportees under the Obama administration, they never had a court hearing. They were just shipped out. And so we have all of these people that were in power or of power that never said a word under the Obama administration and probably not under the Bush administration. But now all of a sudden all of these people think somehow these people have rights, and I guess somebody's got these statistics. It'd be interesting to know how many Montanan deportees were they under the Obama administration when Tester was in office that we never heard anything about, or the DA from Bozeman, or any of these rights groups that never raised this issue under the Obama administration, but certainly under the Trump administration, we certainly now have this problem.
Yeah, so when you look at the numbers and you see, and I looked it up on Grok, which is Elon Musk's AI platform built into X, and you can see the research where Grok gets the numbers from. But yeah, millions of illegal aliens deported under Obama, under Clinton, under both Bushes, under Reagan. And so it's like, oh, all of a sudden now the entire left-wing media mob and the Democrat Party is clutching their pearls over the attempts to deport one criminal illegal alien, like this MS-13 gangbanger who they keep describing as a Maryland man. So I guess the guy that got arrested by ICE in Billings, Montana the other day, I guess they're going to start describing him as a Billings man, right? Not an illegal alien from Mexico. He's a Billings man, according to them.
Well, most likely. Anyway, there you go.
Yeah. Now, yeah, no, great question, Kevin. I actually had the same question a while back, and I was going to just send a tweet out about it, but I thought, you know what? I'm going to ask somebody who might know the answer to this question from a legal standpoint, from an immigration and customs enforcement standpoint. So I reached out to a guy named John Fabricatori. We've had him on the show before. He's a former ICE field office director. He gave a very interesting response to that very question. I don't think it's the answer that you're going to want to hear, but it's the answer we have to hear if we're truly going to solve this border crisis once and for all. So stand by.
Talking about the issues that matter to Montana statewide. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Yeah, so great question there from Kevin in Billings. I had the exact same question. Wait a minute. There were millions of illegal aliens that were deported under all these previous presidents, Democrat and Republican alike. But now they don't even want to let Trump deport one hardcore criminal illegal alien who's committed additional crimes in this country. Now, anyway, Elon Musk actually on X a couple of days ago shared a great video featuring a young lady. I don't see the young lady's name included in the post here, but this young lady does a great summary here and summarizes the numbers under previous presidents. And she did a great mashup of sound bites. You're going to hear Chuck Schumer. You're going to hear Bill Clinton. He's biting his lower lip. We're going to deport these illegals. You know, he's biting the lower lip while he's doing it. And then, you'll hear Barack Obama. You'll hear Barack Obama in here. All talking about the need to get these criminal illegal aliens out of this country. Let me play it straight from X and this post from Elon Musk featuring this young lady.
Remember this.
If you're a criminal, you'll be deported. If you plan to enter the U.S. illegally, your chances of getting caught and sent back just went up. The actions I'm taking are not only lawful, they're the kinds of actions taken by every single Republican president and every single Democratic president for the past half century.
You wouldn't believe that looking at the media today, though. They act like Trump is the worst, most evil person ever for deporting illegal alien criminals. Yet Obama, Bill Clinton, and other Democrats were all on board with this for years up until Trump. And they're on tape saying so.
Committed a crime, deport them. No questions asked, they're gone.
Public service they use impose burdens on our taxpayers. That's why our administration has moved aggressively to secure our borders more by hiring a record number of new border guards, by deporting twice as many criminal aliens as ever before, by cracking down on illegal hiring, by barring welfare benefits to illegal aliens.
We use phrases like undocumented workers. We convey a message to the American people that their government is not serious about combating illegal immigration.
Oh, really?
We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented, unchecked.
All right, there you go. And that was, of course, Barack Hussein Obama at the very end there. And yet look at where the entirety of the Democrat Party is today. Look at where the entirety of the fake news media is today. I mean, NBC Montana is doing a great job reporting on some of these illegal alien crimes in the last couple of weeks. They've got a number of great reports. But yet they're still running with this fake, phony AP style guide. The Associated Press is left-wing fake news propaganda. The Associated Press is basically dead in Montana. The AP, so many news stations don't even use the AP anymore because it provides no service whatsoever. It has been so whittled down that it's basically provides no service anymore. But yet the AP has their left-wing style guide that tells them, oh, don't describe them as illegal aliens. You have to call them undocumented immigrants. Throw that AP style guide in the trash and start reporting the news. But anyway, back to this question. So I reached out to John Fabricatori, who retired. He had a career working with ICE. He was the ICE field office director in Wyoming and in Colorado. So what about this idea that, well, Bushes and Clinton and Obama, they all deported millions of illegal aliens? He says this, it's all a lie. There weren't really millions deported, not in the actual legal sense. So they're reporting these numbers as if they deported all these illegal aliens, but they weren't truly in the legal sense deported. To understand this, you have to look at deportations versus removals. Clinton and Bush had a very high number of voluntary removals, VRs at the border, and voluntary departures, VDs, from the interior. And while Obama significantly lowered that amount, he still had a higher number than Trump's first term. The problem with VRs is that they are not enforced deportations. They're simply turnarounds. You catch them and you send them back without a deportation order. So then what happens is you send them back right across the border. They walk a mile down the road and then they illegally cross right back into the country somewhere else. Trump wanted enforced deportations, and he wanted them flown into the interior of Mexico so they could not just walk right back across the border. Also, if you had a true enforced deportation, an illegal alien could be prosecuted for illegal reentry, a felony. You can't prosecute a voluntary removal or a voluntary departure. John Fabricatori added this, Trump has always tried to do the right thing and have strong actual deportations. The problem is it's a longer process, and the left can constantly file habeas corpus petitions and stays of deportation. That is why Trump is working to use the Alien Enemies Act, a law. It allows him to summarily remove certain aliens without a court hearing. The only way to have mass deportation is the Alien Enemies Act. The public doesn't understand it, and the left is pushing the due process narrative to get Americans to hate it. Biden was allowed to let in millions, but the courts were silent. Now they roadblock Trump daily in hopes of making this a problem and for this administration. So they allowed this invasion to occur, and now they're trying to block these invaders from being sent back home. And that's why President Trump is using the law. Here's the thing. Even if you didn't want to use the Alien Enemies Act, which I know many of you do, most of you do, well, why don't they just go through the courts and do hearings? It would take centuries to hold all of the hearings that would need to be done. That's why the Alien Enemies Act needs to be used. All right, let's see. We've got another caller on the phone lines here. Rod, are you in Denton? Is it Denton? Is that where you're at, Rod?
That's correct.
Hey, all right. Well, great to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. You wanted to weigh in on this student loan conversation, huh?
Yeah. When you sign the note, you sign up to pay the interest. And the interest when I was a young person was 14, 16, 18%. So I really don't have any sympathy for them at this point. I paid my interest.
Yeah, well, when were you a kid? Because I know, you know, man, it's like I was born in the Reagan 80s, and so I've had it relatively good compared to those people who had to live through the Carter 70s until the old Biden years kicked in, and then now we're starting to see things tick up, but it's still nothing like how bad interest rates were back as a result of the Jimmy Carter years, right?
Exactly. So, you know, buck up a little bit. If you sign your name on the note, you're signing up to pay the interest too.
You know, it's for young people today, though. I mean, you know, you think about it. You see your country going bankrupt. $2 trillion deficit, $36 plus trillion in debt. You can't afford a house. You can't afford rent. And you got student loans. They forced you to wear all these stupid masks. They shut down your schools. They canceled your prom. Then they elevated this radical transgender agenda and forced this woke, transgender agenda on you. No wonder these young people are just rejecting all this leftist garbage. They didn't just reject it in America, but if you look at the demographics in Canada, the young people were rejecting it there as well. It was just the aging boomers that kept the left in power with that Carney guy.
Well, all I can tell you is, yeah, I was a kid in the 70s, early 80s, when I went to borrow money to get started in life. The interest rates were double, triple what they are now. So we had our challenges, too. We couldn't afford to buy houses and new cars. And, money just didn't go as far. But we paid the interest.
All right. Well, Rod, great to hear from you. Thanks so much for calling in.
Talk to you later.
Bye. All right. Appreciate it. Yeah. 406-294-0970 is the number for you. Or you can message us on the Montana Talks app as well if you got something you want to talk about. Speaking of illegal aliens and deportations, that whole background that I went into there talking about voluntary removals, voluntary departures, that is essentially the plan, part of the plan that was unveiled yesterday by President Trump's team. Let's see, Tom Homan. Let's go to Secretary of Homeland Security, former Governor of South Dakota, Kristi Noem. Here's what she had to say. I think she was on with Sean Hannity last night talking about this new plan, encouraging the criminal illegal aliens in this country to self-deport.
These illegal aliens that are in our country have the opportunity to go on the CBP Home app, and we will facilitate them finding their way back to their countries. We will pay for their plane ticket. When they get there, we will verify they are who they said they are and that they are, in fact, back home. And then they will be paid $1,000 as an incentive to go there and to be able to help facilitate their housing or their clothing or their food for the period of time that they're back in their country until they can get themselves settled. And listen, Sean, that's really what this whole situation is about. We spend about $17,000 arresting, detaining, and deporting an illegal alien right now today. If we have the opportunity to purchase a plane ticket and send someone home with a stipend like this, it saves us thousands and thousands of dollars. And it also is a much safer situation for officers and for those in communities. And it gives that illegal an opportunity to come back to the United States of America. Remember, if they wait until we arrest them and deport them, they don't ever get the chance to come back to the United States. They don't ever get a chance at the American dream. So those individuals that are here illegally need to realize this is their opportunity to do things the right way.
Yeah, I mentioned today is Tuesday. John Jackson, the Joker from X, is going to join us tomorrow for Unwoke Wednesday because he's tied up today. But this is something he and I have been talking about now for a couple of months is, hey, we can do this the easy way or we can do this the hard way. There you go. This is the easy way. Take the money and run. All right, we got more callers on the line. Back right after this.
This is where Montana Talks at with Lane Nordlund.
I've seen a lot of cattle and met outstanding people from across the globe this week participating in the World Angus Forum in Australia. And it's not just the current generation of Angus producers here this week. The next generation of the Angus industry is competing in the Youth Angus Contest Competition. One of those is representing Team USA from the Big Sky State, being Miss Claire Stevenson.
The World Angus Forum Youth Contest consists of multiple different events, everything from livestock judging to fitting, showing. We just got done with a debate where we were in the finals, luckily, and we have a variety of other little modules that we've been a part of, such as bush mechanics, where we did some irrigation. We did some precision farming math. We reversed a trailer, back to the trailer, through an obstacle course with a manual, which in a bumper pole, which is very difficult for us Americans, but we got it done. Really just a lot of different things. That's just kind of the big ones that we've been a part of, but they've been keeping us busy, that's for sure. Not much sleep.
Youth contest teams are comprised of four individuals aged 18 to 25, all competing for the top honor of the World Angus Forum Youth Contest Championship. They'll be crowned later this week. I'm Wayne Nordlund.
Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
Holy cow, is that the Ken in Great Falls? I see we've got a Ken in Great Falls on the line. I mean, we're looking forward to hearing whichever Ken it may be, but is it the Ken in Great Falls? We'll find out here in a few minutes. We got James in Laurel, though, first up on the phone lines here as we enter the second half of the show. James, what's going on? What's your thoughts? Apparently, this student loan conversation has got everybody commenting this morning. Thanks for calling in.
Yeah, good morning, Aaron. I graduated from high school in 71, and I was in New Mexico, and I thought, well, I'm going to go to college out in California, so I went out and enrolled and took one semester at in Pasadena, and at the end of one semester, I was in debt, $500 in student loan. That doesn't sound like much now, but it took forever to pay that off. But after one semester, I looked at that, and I said, there's no way I'm going to stay here 4 years. So I moved back to New Mexico and enrolled in a, you know, the state university there, and I thought I was going to pay my way. So I got married and was in college and, you know, worked a 40-hour week plus went to school. Sometimes it was, you know, like from 6 to 10 o'clock at night, but we're raising a family, and there was just no way that I was going to go in debt of the student loan. And so I earned my degree, and I worked towards my master's and never took out another student loan. So I just, you know, I worked, and we put every month, every penny we had into paying the school fee. Then we raised our family, and so we had 7 kids. And I told them, I said, I want you to at least take 1 year of college or university. I said, you don't have to do any more than that, but I want you to see if that's, you know, fit for you. But I told them, I said, whatever you do, don't get into the student loan. I said, work every job that you can, spend your time studying, apply for every scholarship, every grant, everything out there, but try to stay away from the loans. And I had, we had kids that worked their way through college and never took out a student loan. And in the end, there's a couple of them that actually the college owed them money because they had, you know, they'd worked and put every penny they had into paying it. And, you know, it can be done, but it's there's no time to play. There's no free time. And I told my kids, I said, look at this. Look at your study as though it's a job. I said, you can either pay for your student, for your education by getting good grades. I said, if you get good grades, you're an asset to the college. They'll help you with scholarships and grants to keep you there because you raise the, you know, the level of the university. I said, yeah. You go there just to be an average student and just fool around and play. I said, you're going to pay for it the rest of your life.
It's going to be a little bit harder. And part of it, too, comes back to, well, what job are you looking to get after you get out of college? And what's the outcome of the path that you choose to go down? It's going to be really interesting to see, you know, especially now as we're entering graduation season here in Montana, to see which path a lot of these kids choose to do, because we are seeing more of a push away from the four-year liberal arts degrees into the trade schools, or straight into the trades, straight into industry, straight into the workforce. So it's going to be interesting to see. Obviously, the military recruitment is seeing a massive rise right now under Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth and President Trump as well. Hey, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Thanks to James and Laurel for calling in. Let's go to Ken in Great Falls next up. Ken, good to hear from you.
Good to be on, Aaron. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, it's been a while. Great to hear from you.
Yeah. I've been going through the stages of grief with the Trump here, so.
Well, people were worried about you. We were worried. They're like, man, how's Ken doing, you know? Because it's like, we don't have to agree on all the issues, but we're glad you're doing well.
You bet. Well, I don't agree with you on this one, so here it is. I graduated out of MSU in 83. Tuition was $900 a year. Lived in a place, $130 a month. My son goes there. The average cost is $19,000 a year. Now, he lives in a place. He's doing his PhD there now. $2,000 for an apartment.
Yeah.
It's way beyond. See, the state used to pay 80% of the cost of our state schools. Now they're way below 20% now. It's a lot different. My kids, fortunately, I was able to sell some land, and I paid off their student loans. They couldn't work their way through school. I never had a loan because I worked a union job in the summer. That's not available nowadays. These kids can't work themselves through. It costs much, much more to live in Bozeman or Missoula and go to school.
Yeah, even if you can afford the tuition.
Talking about they worked themselves through school, it was a different world.
Even if you could afford the tuition, how can you afford the housing? How can you afford everything else this day and age? Yeah, that's why some people are saying, hey, I've had people tell me that they were going to send their kids to Bozeman, but because of the price of housing, they had to send their kids somewhere else.
Well, that's scary because we need engineers. The Chinese are producing 700,000 engineers a year. We're only producing 70. That is the war. That is what the future is going to be. Who can design the new stuff? We have to get our kids into college. I mean, I know I have both the trade. I have a union trade and I have a college engineering degree. But we need them engineering degrees more than anything right now. And we have to help our kids. And the best way you can make our economy grow, you take away these student loans so these kids that have graduated can buy a house.
Hey, Ken, hold that thought if you can, because I want to have a little more back and forth with you here, but I don't want to keep our next caller waiting too long. So, Ken, stand by if you can, and I'll come back to you. Let's go to, let's see, we had a caller in Shodo. Okay, here we go. Chet in Shodo. Chet, are you there?
Yeah, how's it going, Aaron?
Hey, good. Yeah, what's your thoughts?
I wanted to kind of just tag on to what Ken was saying there. You know, I just pulled it up as I was waiting for you here. The minimum wage in 1979 was $2.90. Well, let's just say it was even $2.50. That's $400 a month if you work full time. And if you're paying $500 a year to go to college, 1 month of work almost pays for that. You know, we live in a day and age where people don't make that kind of money. I'm looking back when my parents bought a house in 1979. I think it was around $40,000 with a combined income of close to $35,000. I bought a house in 2018 for $130,000, making $50,000. Those ratios aren't the same. This older generation, I don't disagree with them. I am 100% for paying for the debt you sign up for. However, the debt-to-ratio income isn't the same.
Well,
and Chet,
the other thing I wonder is, I wonder how much of this also is, you know, the other problem here is the deindustrialization of America, and the fact is, and that's what President Trump is trying to reverse right now. That's what all these trade discussions are about. That's why he's, you know, working to get this new trade deal with India that's in the works right now, is because we've got to reindustrialize America so that we rebuild the wealth of America. And I mean, all of these campuses have a lot of money. MSU has a lot of money. They have been on a building spree. That's why Waded Cruzado is being so celebrated here as she heads toward retirement, is because of the massive wealth that she brought to that campus and the massive new buildings that she helped build through the private sector and the state and others. And so these campuses have a lot of wealth. But yet it's this guarantee of student loan money that's allowed them to amass these empires. And then now the kids are the ones paying for it while they're no longer kids anymore.
Oh, I absolutely agree with you, Aaron. I mean, I'm an independent contractor. I do okay for myself. I didn't go to college. I'm glad I didn't. But, you know, I graduated in the early 2000s, and that was what was pushed into our heads, is you got to go to college and get a four-year degree if you want to be successful in life. And I'm doing better than a lot of people that did that, you know. It's an unfortunate situation, but, you know, when I was a kid, I grew up in Pennsylvania, and, you know, you either went to college or you went to work in a factory. But the point is that there were factories, and they were decent-paying jobs. You know, my dad worked in a factory. He did construction stuff through a factory. And there was a handful of factories in my small town. I grew up in a town about the size of Shodo back east, and there was factories everywhere. Like, there wasn't.
Now the factories are closed, and those towns are, you know, filled with crime and drugs and that's what, and J.D. Vance has been a survivor of some of those types of communities. Hey, Chet, thanks for the phone call. Great to hear from you. Larry in Great Falls sent us a message on the Montana Talks app. He says all of these students crying that they have to pay back their student loans need to be reminded that it was Obama who took over the student loan program from banks and independent agencies to help fund his Obamacare health care plan. The only ones this helped were the administrators and CEOs of each. Both programs have been failures. Logan in Billings says, I would like to see our federal politicians address issues with the credit bureaus. Their information controls so much of our financial lives, but their information is often wrong, incomplete, and difficult and time-consuming to fix. All right, anyway, he describes some of the credit card interest rates as loan shark levels. All right, hopefully Ken in Great Falls was able to stay on the phone lines. I want to give him a chance to respond to some of what we just talked about. So, Ken, if you're there, stand by. We'll get to you once again right after this. Plus, phone lines are open, 294-09.
Broadcasting live across the great state of Montana, powered by the Montana Electric Cooperative Association. Your Montana Electric Cooperative, they do much more than keep the lights on for you. This is Montana Talks with Aaron Flint.
All right, definitely want to hear what Ken in Great Falls has to say regarding kind of the last couple of callers in our back and forth talking about student loans and what I refer to as empire building on these college campuses across the country. First, though, Ken, I want to get your take. So, you know, I know a number of our listeners are so happy to hear from you because they were worried about you because they hadn't heard from you since the election. And so I know you kind of joked up about it when you first got on the phone lines about how, you were just kind of recovering after, you know, Trump's win in November. And then, of course, you know, the Senate race was another big one. How did you survive and overcome the past few months? Because I know, you know, people take elections very seriously. You know, it's an important part of our country.
Yeah, it is for sure. Well, I'm recovering because I went to see Bernie up in Missoula.
I looked for you.
There's over 400-500 people out on the bridge every other week here in Great Falls. We're working hard at the grassroots level to build up the Democratic Party again, and it's working well. And it's coming back. It's going to be pushing education. I mean, this is a war with China. We have to have affordable college and affordable health care. And it was affordable when I was a kid. It's not affordable for my kids. And we just have to get back to that point. We have to do what my parents did for me. And that's affordable education in college. Because we need engineers and research scientists and doctors. And kids have to be able to, you know, if you don't want to go to college, fine. But if you want to go to college, you've got to be able to pay for it. And not this massive debt that we're doing. We didn't do that with my generation. So we shouldn't do it with our kids. We should help them.
So what do you think? You got to see Bernie and AOC in Missoula. Do you think it's going to be AOC in 2028?
I don't know. There's a bunch out there that are stepping forward. I like her and I like Bernie. But anyone that's speaking that same talk about good health care, good school, good union jobs. That's the trick. It's union jobs that made this country great. They killed that. I mean, Steve Daines, he graduated out of college year after me, MSU with an engineering degree, went to China and moved American factories to China. That's how he became rich.
Well, he didn't move the factories to China. He was selling American products to the Chinese, and that's what we need to do is we need to be selling them our stuff instead of us buying their crap. And I think and speaking of the unions, Donald J. Trump has got a lot of the unions on board, especially as he's working to reindustrialize America right now. Hey, either way, Ken, great to hear from you again. I know a number of our listeners are going to be excited to hear you. Once again, they're glad to hear that you're doing well, because it's been a while. All right, before we run out of time, 294-0970. If you want to jump in on the conversation, you better call right now, though. Meanwhile, let's go to Ron in Ronan. Ron, thanks for the call. What's on your mind?
My feeling is that we are overlooking one very important aspect, and that is the things that I and a lot of other guys did, and that is going to the military. They'll take care of you, and they'll also educate you, and you'll be serving the country.
That's right. That's what I did. I mean, it was one of the best things I did in life. I never thought that I was the right fit for the military. I always respected the military, but I thought, man, I'm not disciplined enough for that. I'm a little rebellious. That's why I like to be on talk radio, because I like to fight back, right? But then 9/11 happened, changed everything. But, like, that's how, you know, my first 2 years of college, I wanted to go to a good school. So I went to Howard University in Washington, D.C., and I waited tables 5 nights a week to try to pay for it, and that still wasn't enough. And so anyway, but then I joined the National Guard and ROTC, and I actually was able to get to enjoy college for my final couple of years as a result of that. But even still, it took me 2 deployments later to finally pay off all my student loans, and yet, you know, so many others just want to get it for free without serving their country.
Ron, agreed.
What branch were you in, Ron?
I was Air Force in the Korean War.
Wow. God bless you. What years were you over there?
Well, it was one of those, I work for the intelligence department, and I'm not able to tell you a lot of things.
Wow. Well, I'd love to meet you for a cup of coffee or something one of these days. And, I've met a few folks around Montana that they can't really talk about too much of their service record. But, either way, it's an honor to know you're listening and to get a chance to talk to you.
Well, I'll try to do some email work with you, too.
Yeah, perfect. Sounds good. All right, Ron.
Thanks for what you do.
Hey, thank you. Thanks for calling in. Thanks for your service. Thanks for your sacrifice to this country. He probably left. Ron, are you still there? Yeah, okay. All right. He already took. I was going to ask him if he's ever gotten a chance to go see the Korean War Memorial back in Washington, D.C. It's one of my favorite memorials. It really is just incredible. And then I was over in Korea for an exercise. God, that was over a decade ago now. And I got to go to the Korean War Museum in Seoul as well. And that was an incredible museum. Let's see. Yeah. Today's Tuesday. The Joker, he's off. I think he was at a track meet or something like that this morning, off running in the rain. So we're going to have an unwoke Wednesday with Wednesday's Montana Talks and John Jackson, the Joker, in the house. So that's going to be a ton of fun. All right. Thanks for being with us. Check out more stories, montanatalks.com.